Learn to do what is right. Promote justice. Give the oppressed reason to celebrate. Take up the cause of the orphan. Defend the rights of the widow. Isaiah 1, verse 17.
It's, we live in two Americas. And that was prime example of that yesterday. And if you don't understand that or don't see that after seeing what you saw yesterday, then you you really need to take a step back, not even just one step, maybe four or five or even 10 steps backwards, and ask yourself, how do you want your kids, or how do you want, your grandkids? How do we want America to be viewed as? How do we want to live, in this beautiful country? Because yesterday was not it. And so many, black folks in my household during that time, and it's on the TV, couldn't help but to wonder if those were my kind storming the Capitol, what would have been the outcome, let alone storm inside the offices, inside the hallways. Just a very, very low time. All you got to do is look at the photos from the peaceful protests of what we, were fighting for. We were out there fighting for lives, and we saw yesterday they're talking about votes.
Then Jesus said, "Which of these three men do you think was a neighbor to the man who was attacked by the robbers?" The teacher of the law answered, "The one who helped him." Jesus told him, "Go and imitate his example." Luke 10, 36 through 38. Hi, everybody, and welcome to The Breathing Room, a space where people of color and faith can come together to have our lived experiences acknowledged, to witness each other's journey, and to take a collective deep breath. My name is Kevin Holland. This is episode 7, and the title is Tim Scott Says America is Not a Racist Country. The data says otherwise. A couple of months ago, I was invited to speak at a midweek gathering of one of our sister churches. It was a great time. We had a great conversation, and then there was time for Q&A. One of the questions was from an African-American who said that he had not experienced racism, and so he questioned whether or not it existed. What do you do with that? How do you answer that kind of question? What do you do with African-Americans who vouch for America not being racist? And so we have this battle for the narrative of exactly what America is. Are we a racist country or are we not? One thing I will say is that denial is deeply embedded in the DNA of this country when it comes to issues of racism and injustice. It is highly developed, multifaceted, time-tested, nuanced, long-lived, sophisticated, immovable, and reliable. For the evils of racism to have existed in our country for this long, they couldn't have survived were it not for an intricate pattern of denial and deceit that was sold to the broader public to assuage our national conscience. The audacity and the arrogance of some white pastor saying that systemic racism doesn't exist, as though they've experienced all the lived experiences of all the people in this country and have come up with that definitive conclusion. How insulting. Just because I haven't had a particular lived experience doesn't mean that millions of others haven't. And that's how I responded to and answered that person who asked that question at midweek. I really appreciated their honesty, and it is a quandary for some. How can something that I haven't experienced be characteristic of others' experience? I think it just requires some basic humility to say that two things can be true at once. Two things can be true at the same time. More than one thing can be true at the same time. And while someone may not have experienced overt racism, saying that because of that it doesn't exist is foolish. In this episode, I just want to look at this question and consider whether it's a black person denying that America's a racist country or someone of the dominant culture. It's as though We cannot, we dare not accept that to be true about our country, because if we accept that it's true, we have to accept that a lot of what we think about our country is actually mythology. And many of us, many citizens in this country are not willing to have the narrative of the country that they love change. They're not willing to think about it a different way. They're not willing to look at it a different way. And so they deny what's before their eyes, and worse, they try to persuade other people that what they see and experience isn't real. 8 days after the Chauvin verdict, President Joe Biden spoke to Congress. There was a rebuttal to his speech given by the Republican Party. The rebuttal was given by Tim Scott, who is the only Black Republican senator from South Carolina. He made a really jarring statement. He spent time in his speech recalling several stories of how racism had affected him as a Black man living in the southern United States, but then went on to say, "Hear me clearly, America is not a racist country." The inherent contradiction was evident and jarring and insulting. Speaking of this comment, Dr. Rashawn Ray of the Brookings Institution said this of Scott's statement: "Black people who succeed often walk on pins and needles because they realize that their success and maintaining that success is precarious, Tim Scott being one of them. It's this notion that to be successful as an African American, you have to appease the conscience of the dominant culture by continuing to perpetuate the myth that America's racist history isn't what it is, and that somehow we've evolved beyond that being who we are." Shortly after Tim Scott's speech, an insightful article for The Guardian was written by Mona Shalibi, and the title is, "Tim Scott Says America is Not a Racist Country. The Data Says Otherwise." Data sets consistently show racial disparities from the healthcare system to the criminal justice system. Those gaps are wide and persistent. His choice of words was categorical. When Tim Scott, the only Black Republican in the Senate, responded to Joe Biden's speech to Congress last week, he said, quote, "America is not a racist country," end quote. But racial disparities exist in the U.S. healthcare system, its criminal justice system, its educational system, and its economic system. Those gaps are wide, they are persistent, and in some cases, racial disparities have grown over time rather than narrowed. Data set after data set, from nonpartisan think tanks to government sources, consistently show these racial disparities. And unless one believes inherent biological differences exist between racial groups in the U.S. that would explain their differing success in this country, a belief that would, by the way, be racist, the only possible explanation for all this is structural racism. These differences exist from the moment that a child is born in the U.S. One in every 7 Black babies has a low birth weight compared with one in every 15 white babies, according to the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention data from 2019. And that gap remains. Black, Hispanic, and Native American children are more likely to live in poverty than their white, Asian, Hawaiian, or Pacific Islander counterparts, as census data from 2020 reveals. By the time that graduation rolls around, just 74% of Native American or Alaska Native children will complete their public high school education, compared with 79% of Black children and 89% of white children. These statistics come from the U.S. Department of Education 2017 through 2018. In adulthood, too, racial discrimination affects just about every aspect of a person's life. The 2018 American Community Survey, conducted by the Census Bureau, reveals that people of color are most likely to work in low-paid frontline jobs. And tragically, though not surprisingly, these are the jobs that often have the greatest exposure to the risks of COVID-19. Black people in the U.S. are almost 1.9 times more likely to die from the disease than their white counterparts. From Hispanic to Latino people, the risk is 2.3 times higher, and for the Native American, it's 2.4 times higher than white people. Crucially, these statistics cannot be treated in isolation. Health is affected by poverty. Poverty affects educational outcomes. Education affects economic security, and so it goes. Research has shown that Black babies are more likely to be born at a low birth weight because of the physical demands of the low-paid work that many of their mothers are doing. That low-paid work can make it harder to get health insurance, too. While just 5% of white people in the U.S. don't have health insurance, that share doubles for Black people, 10%, and doubles again for Hispanic people, 20%, according to the census. And of course, a lack of access to health care puts an individual at greater risk of dying from COVID-19. To say that the U.S. is not a racist country is to make a statement that exists outside of reality. It is a fantasy to which many people, especially white Americans, would like to cling. Martin Luther King Jr. spoke on this subject as well. In a speech entitled The Other America, given on March 14, 1968, to Grosse Pointe High School in Michigan, King said the following: "The question now is whether America is prepared to do something massively, affirmatively, and forthrightly about the great problem we face in the area of race and the problem which can bring the curtain of doom down on American civilization if it is not solved." And I would like to talk for the next few minutes about some of the things that must be done if we are to solve this problem. The first thing I would like to mention is that there must be a recognition on the part of everybody in this nation that America is still a racist country. Now, however unpleasant that sounds, it is the truth, and we will never solve the problem of racism until there is a recognition of the fact that racism still stands at the center of so much of our nation, and we must see racism for what it is. I thought Stacey Abrams responded to Tim Scott's comments with grace and truth. Here's what she said.
I'd like to ask you about one of the existing and persisting divides here in America right now, which is just acknowledging what the problems are that need addressing. And I want to ask you about the Republican rebuttal to President Biden's first joint address to Congress that came from Senator Tim Scott, because one line in particular caught a lot of people's attention. He said, hear me clearly, America is not a racist country. And he argued that Democrats actually ignore racial progress for political gain. First, I'd love just to get your reaction on what you thought when you heard that line, but also to reflect on the idea that this is not a policy difference. This seems to be a very fundamentally different view of what problems exist in the U.S. So how do you bridge those divides?
Much like Senator Scott, I grew up in the South, and it is very easy to grow up in the same place and have a very different view of what's happening. If I'm going to be charitable, I would say that his point is that not every American you meet is racist in their intent or their behavior. But racism is a system. It is not simply about individual actions. And that has been part of the challenge of combating racism. If it has to be overt, if it must be grotesque, then we allow 95% of the incidences to go unchallenged and to go unnoticed. I believe that we have systemic racism in the United States that requires response. I believe there are portions of our nation that are indeed grounded in racist systems. And I believe this nation has not gone far enough. Yes, we have made progress, but the deep hole we began in is not one we have climbed out of yet. But I also recognize that there is something aspirational in his language and his tone. And that is what we should attempt to reach. But where we disagree is how close we are. But where we also disagree is whose responsibility it is. And I would argue that it is absolutely the responsibility of anyone who stands for public office to serve the realities of those they stand for and to ignore the very real examples of systemic racism, whether it's the deployment of vaccines and the deployment of medication, the refusal of southern states to expand Medicaid, the inaction that we have seen on police and justice. And we are seeing Tim Scott step up to try to address that. But we have to have a uniformity of understanding that as long as racism exists in any system that is in America, then that stands as a marker of where America stands. And that is what we must address.
In her New York Times bestselling book, Caste, The Origins of Our Discontents, Pulitzer Prize winning author Isabel Wilkerson wrote the following: "To recalibrate how we see ourselves, I use language that may be more commonly associated with people in other cultures to suggest a new way of understanding our hierarchy. Dominant caste, ruling majority, favored caste, or upper caste instead of or in addition to white. Middle castes instead of or in addition to Asian or Latino. Subordinate caste, lowest caste, bottom caste, disfavored caste, historically stigmatized instead of African American, original, conquered, or indigenous people instead of or in addition to Native American, marginalized people in addition to or instead of women of any race or minorities of any kind. Like other old houses, America has an unseen skeleton, a caste system that is as central to its operation as are the studs and joists that we cannot see in the physical buildings we call home. Caste is the infrastructure of our divisions. It is the architecture of human hierarchy, the subconscious code of instructions for maintaining, in our case, a 400-year-old social order. Throughout human history, three caste systems have stood out: the tragically accelerated, chilling, and officially vanquished caste system of Nazi Germany, the lingering millennia-long caste system of India, and the shape-shifting, unspoken, race-based caste pyramid in the United States. Each version relied on stigmatizing those deemed inferior to justify the dehumanization necessary to keep the lowest-ranked people at the bottom and to rationalize the protocols of enforcement. As we go about our daily lives, caste is the wordless usher in a darkened theater, flashlight cast down in the aisles, guiding us to our assigned seats for a performance. The hierarchy of caste is not about feelings or morality. It is about power. Which groups have it and which do not? It's about resources. Which caste is seen as worthy of them and which are not? Who gets to acquire and control them and who does not? It is about respect, authority, and assumptions of competence. Who was accorded these and who was not? As a means of assigning value to entire swaths of humankind, caste guides each of us beyond the reaches of our awareness. It embeds into our bones an unconscious ranking of human characteristics and sets forth the rules, expectations, and stereotypes that have been used to justify brutalities against entire groups within our species. It is the historic flashcard to the public of how they are to be treated, where they are expected to live, what kinds of positions they are expected to hold, whether they belong in this section or town or that seat in a boardroom, whether they should be expected to speak with authority on this or that subject, whether they will be administered pain relief in a hospital, whether their neighborhood is likely to adjoin a toxic waste site or to have contaminated water flowing from their taps, whether they are more or less likely to survive childbirth in the most advanced nation in the world, whether they may be shot by authorities with impunity. We may mention race referring to people as Black or white or Latino or Asian or indigenous when what lies beneath each label is centuries of history and assigning of assumptions and values to physical features in a structure of human hierarchy. What an exhausting existence to live with the effects of a reality and then be expected to pretend it doesn't exist to appease the dominant culture. So who's right? Is it merely semantics? To take it a step further, in the church, what do we individually and collectively believe? If we don't believe there's a problem, there's not going to be any energy around proactively solving it. And therein lies the current battle. Who are we as a society? Who are we as a church? Who are we as individual Christians? From the Derek Chauvin verdict, from a 21st century lynching that all the world saw as one of the clearest manifestations for a current racist system in America, to a U.S. senator of African-American descent denying that America is a racist country 8 days after the verdict, to the lived reality we know and experience to be true. That is one of the reasons why this race issue is so difficult and convoluted and why so many in society and the church have avoided it. It seems to be an unsolvable problem, so why stir things up because you're never going to fix it anyway? Ibram Kendi, scholar and author of the book Stamped from the Beginning, was asked if he was hopeful that racism would be eradicated. He responded in this way, saying, in substance, "I think we have no choice but to hope, because if one is not hopeful, then there's no impetus to continue the struggle. I find hope not in a naive view of the country or the church. In fact, I've been disabused of my naivete more than ever before over the last couple of years. I think I find hope in the fact that those who went before us faced situations more life-threatening, more dire, more dehumanizing, and more deflating, and yet continue to hope. And we in the 21st century are the fruit of that hope. So not only do I think that we must hope, I think we have no choice but to hope, because if we don't, we dishonor those who hoped for us before us." Thanks again for spending some time in the Breathing Room, a space where people of color and faith can come together to have our lived experiences acknowledged, to witness each other's journey, and to take a collective deep breath. Be sure to subscribe to The Breathing Room on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google, or however you listen. And if you like this episode, don't forget to leave a rating and a review. To connect with us, follow us on Twitter, Facebook, or Instagram, or send us an email at thebreathingroompod@gmail.com. For The Breathing Room, I'm Kevin Holland, and I look forward to seeing you on the next episode.